going to examine our comments today is Tuesday, April 12th, 2015. I'm Senator Lou Costello. Welcome. Senator Myron is still in attendance. The time is 1:35. Today on the agenda, we have 7 bills. Bill 203, Senate Bill 118, Senate House Bill 105, House Bill 314, Senate Bill 206, House Bill 254, and Senate Bill 55. So as you can see, it's all about the community now that the planet, because some of you are just simply not being too many substitutes and others are moving them out, so. The first bill on today's calendar is House Bill 203, which is the Manhattan Credit Group Overtime Pay. This is the bill's second hearing. The intent is to adopt the committee substitute, take members' questions, and look to the level of the committee. I'll back to order, and I apologize for that. We do not have to see this from the original bill that we heard about. We met it back on the overtime. Okay, it is the same bill that we will be looking to adopt today. We do have some here from the administration, from the Department of Labor, Blaine Mitchell. So if there are any questions, I just want to read the title. This is an act related to overtime pay eligibility for medical care providers employed as members of FICRS related to overtime pay eligibility for air ambulance service provided by FICRS and repealing provisions related to the wages. So this is the bill. Are there any questions of community members? Seeing none, Senator Lyle?
Thank you,
Madam
Chair. Senator, we've set bill 203 for committee with individual recommendations in the act preserve.
Thank you. We will be returning to sign the bill. So our next bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 118, the DRMS, so it is a peer review bill. The intent this afternoon is simply to adopt a committee substitute here from the department and then set this bill aside. And just to remind committee members, when we first heard this bill, we were told that there was a CS on the way, and so we wanted to share the original idea, and now this committee substitute reflects a simpler approach and one that then we will consider a simpler time. So with that, Senator Lyle, would you like to move to that CS?
Thank you, Senator. The committee adopts CS for Senator 118 Madam Chair, there are several structural changes in the committee substitute that I'd like to speak on broadly on. Track changes, as it's a Senate bill, where all the bill is not specifically exercised. The concept, Madam Chair, between the two versions of the bill was removing the involvement of the Department of Commerce through the Court of Registration, Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. In the concept phase and development of this bill, it was viewed that peer review of the course of the bill before as an alternative to the Department of Natural Resources traditional permitting process, and a peer review for survey work being coordinated for a subcommittee of the Rails Board, the Board of Registration, Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. Upon discussion with the Department department, stakeholders, and review of the fiscal numbers and their projects. It was decided that the discussion on the bill would be better work as just a simple plain peer review process with individuals licensed by the state of Alaska as opposed to involving an entirely different department in the running process. So the CSM chair on the broad level removes the involvement of the board and the Department of Commerce from the peer review process on the bill. Which is not land survey, which is the subject of the peer review option. What it does beginning in section 109 here is basically provide for within the same 2-week time period the department would refer or give the option for people who have submitted to the department to contract and work with a direct land surveyor. It could be done by individuals, it could be done by private firms. But this is not the way that the municipality of Anchorage allows for peer review in the cases that they have or extended work or too much on their own department's plate. So section 103 removes and talks a little bit more about how that would work in a 2-week time period with individuals. Section 2 of the committee substitute is directly connected, as this is the same as the original section 5 in the bill, which is the powers of the commissioner to implement the policy. It basically adds to the duties of the commissioner at the bottom of page 3 of the CSC, subsection 9 on 123, that includes the powers to provide for peer review process. So, that language mode stays the same. And then there are transition regulations that lower the year, the intent and the effect of the original bill. So, I'm sure it's an extensive overhaul and it removes the involvement of the Department of Commerce. And the intention would be to put the CS on the table and continue to work with DNR and how this can best be handled without involving different departments and without additional cost to the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Jennifer. I did want to mention that Senator Diesel has been with us for some time. Welcome, Senator Diesel. Appreciate it. Next, we have House Bill 125, which is going to be presented by the bill sponsor, Representative Teresa Wells' staff, Grace Abbott. So with that, I did want to mention that this is the bill's first hearing. If the intent here will be as a sponsor, to hear from the administration, take members' questions, to take public testimony, and then set the bill aside for further review. So with that, welcome, Ms. Abbott. Please feel free to introduce the bill.
Thank you so much for the record, Grace Abbott, staff to Representative Abbott. I'm going to be here today to protect the community. When used correctly, medicines with DXM are safe and effective in soothing symptoms or causing colds. However, when taken in high doses, those medicines can produce hallucinations, confusion, low vision, nausea, excessive fatigue, and loss of motor control, which do also sound like normal side effects and are definitely easily avoided by feeding the recommended dosage. Unfortunately, 4% of teens, so that's 8th graders through 12th graders, unintentionally taken, exceeding large amounts of this cough medicine, including DXM, to very high. As we know, Alaskans take substance abuse issues very seriously, and the abuse of DXM should be no exception. House Bill 2562 assists in combating this problem by prohibiting the sale of the DXM to Alaskans under 18 without a prescription. The simple step was simply asking for proof of age prior to sale would maintain access to effective over-the-counter cough medicines for Americans who use them or less than 3 years to treat cough symptoms with cold or flu. But limiting access to a small but significant number of adolescents who might abuse them. The penalty for those who would sell to minors would be $550 and escalate to $250 in the case of future offenses. This is now passed in about 10 states and is common practices and disorderly. And has led to face opposition simply seeks to keep them safe. Thank you very much, Ms. Allen. Are there any questions of committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call up Casey Schroeder with the Department of Law.
There's nothing in terms of the sponsor that the medicines would be put behind the counter instead of an ID tag that would be triggered at the point of sale. So they would be presented
are in the aisle just like they are right now. And then the energy would be asked for it the quickest sale. It would be dissimilar to something like Suicide, where they keep a registry. I believe that is intended to make sure that people aren't making a decision or doing anything else. But that's really not the concern with extra before that. It's just the same age. Those purchasing the drug, obviously, many people might not know that you couldn't purchase it. It would be for those who are responsible for selling it. That would be the reason.
And then,
I went to a PA union and some external aid bill that said that the law was restricted to only those over 18. I believe that would be an effective way to have a message across.
Any questions you might have, and also additionally, if you need to reach out to the
house on 195, but my house on 135. He's saying I'm a public house on the house. And he's setting the fence side in front. He gave his sponsor for you to use him. I appreciate that. Next on our agenda is House Bill 314, and introduced by Representative Shelley Hughes. This is a bill second hearing. The intent is to adopt a community substitute, take members' questions, and then look to the House Committee. Senator Beasley, would you like to make a motion to adopt the community substitute?
I'm sorry, I'm with the committee on the series of Senate Bill 314, and I'm also going to be making one of such a policy working document.
I will object so that my aide, Wilson Allen, can explain the change in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Wilson Allen is not the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. The committee substitute, Madam Chair, makes there are two changes to be submitted to bills received by the committee. And those at the beginning are found on page 3, lines 6 through 11. What the committee substitute does now is, Madam Chair, is retain the language by which the Department of Commerce would report and coordinate with the Artists and his annual report to the legislature on these regional development groups' activities. Artists fill many of the functions that communities and industry agencies might do to a local level of coordination that is very valuable and more efficient in the state processes. What this does is that despite the funding for Artists sunsetting and being removed from the budget, this retains the language having the ability to work with these organizations to present a report to the legislature that summarizes and updates policymakers on what is happening at this regional level. Members also have on their desk a sample of some of Artists' work, Southeast Conference, for instance, a climate numbers report that was passed out of the hearing today. So basically, this language just retains that the Department that coordinates and produces reports summarizing the Artists' work. The second change, Madam Chair, takes place on page 4, that is section 4 of CS line 9 and line 10 in the original bill. And what this does, Madam Chair, is remove the sunset provision for the ARPA program. As there is no longer state funding going to this program, what this does is, again, this removes the sunset clause for the program. It reauthorizes the program and allows the legislature to, if need be, revisit or remove authorization for the program by legislation in the future. This is now an amendment to Artists, Madam Chair, to provide some certainty to the groups that make up these Artists. These are regional groups that offer a conglomeration of local officials. They do long-term planning with federal grants to achieve match. As the federal state funding going to the program anymore, it's not providing them some certainty in terms of their authorization and would be helpful to help local and regional officials in Artists work. And that completes the changes in the CS, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there further objections to the report, please? I will reply to the further objections. I see none. The committee substitute is adopted. We have here Brittany Sarahay, Kingwood, the director of the Division of Economic Development. And I was hoping to ask the question of the administration on the committee substitute. So the committee substitute came out of the concern by members that we no longer know what the Artists are involved in. Perhaps they lose some recognition of what their work is. Do you think that the way that the committee substitute would put an undue burden on the Artists? I mean, they're familiar with the department and business information that we're requiring. Going to take a lot of time to collect and prepare on behalf of Artists. I mean, you have someone, we have Deborah Donnelly, who asked the same question of them. measure. No, I don't believe so. I spoke to a couple of arteries yesterday to see whether or not they thought there would be errors, and both of them said no that I spoke to. So it's reports, requirements for other reporting, like most of them would be producing anyway. And in the past, the legislature has asked that if possible, the reporting be electronic, as if the department's intent to have this be presented in a form that's going to just cost them in the legislature. The longer print reports, as you post on our website, the electronic version is the annual report that we did earlier in the year for the auditors. So that's posted electronically on the website. And that would be how it would follow as well.
Great, thank you very much. Any other questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. Online questions, we have Doug Griffin with the Southwest Alaska Municipal Council. Mr. Griffin, can you just answer the question I had, which is about just the information that you have provided to the department, and if you feel like you can do that without too much of a burden on the on small feet?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for staying on this bill and not working down on the district. The short answer is no. Reports are always a little bit more. We're just being modifying reporting organizations to our government. The benefit of the station and our legislators is not asking too much. And we get on one channel over to the year, so that is not going to be a problem at all.
Thank you very much. I would like to invite the sponsor of the bill forward if you'd like to make any final comments. Welcome, Representative Hughes.
Thank you. I'm Shelly Hughes, Representative of the House District 11 Congress. Thank you for hearing the bill. I appreciate it. The arteries, as we discussed at the first hearing, are an important part of moving our state forward, particularly considering what we're facing and the challenges and the issues, particularly important in the rural areas. I appreciate the committee substitute. The arteries are okay with it. I'm good with it. This is really to help them move along. There may be some smaller arteries that there might be some concerns, but we haven't heard that. So I just want to thank you for putting it forward. I think the historical information and data that we'll collect will be important over time. Will be great to help in history. So thank you for thinking about that.
Thank you very much. Senator Diesel.
Okay. Asking for a motion. Thank you for the clarification. I move the CRC Senate Bill 314-1381-4 of our committee within legal recommendations in the Dutch fiscal month.
Is there any objections to the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. And we're going to read the case before we vote. Senate Bill 206.
Welcome back to order, Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 206, and I would like to welcome Lori Winghire, the Director of the Division of Insurance, and also Deputy Commissioner Fred Parity. Thank you for being here today. This is a bill that was introduced by the Rules Committee at the request of the Governor, and it's the intent to hear from the administration and take questions and then look to the will of the committee. So with that, please feel free to introduce this legislation.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Parity. I'm Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We bring Senate Bill 206 back before you today, essentially to address the fragile condition of Alaska's individual health insurance market. As you're aware from your own experiences as well as prior testimony before the committee, this segment of Alaska's insurance market has suffered or experienced, is the right word, back-to-back rate increases of approximately 36%. In my 19 months in the department, we've gone from four carriers in the individual market to two, and one of those two carriers has been significantly stressed this year. The Senate Bill 206 is a restructure of the ACHEA program. It's grounded in prior Alaska statute. Specifically, if I could bring reference, we handed out, you saw this data in your packet. We took the liberty of adding some yellow highlight for clarification.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I'd like to welcome Senator Stevens.
Thank you. And if we could go then to that table with the yellow highlight on it, you can see that straight from our 2015 annual report, we were talking about roughly 236,000 covered lives. The next block at the bottom half of that first page is the federal reinsurance program under the Affordable Care Act. The highlight on 2016 is a per member per month charge of $2.25 as an annual fee and a 3% tax that is averages $30 per member per month as an individual and $18 per member per month for a group. These two items effectively sunset at the end of this year. The tax may come back in a subsequent year, but for purposes of this analysis, they are ending at the end of this year, which leads us to page two. If you go to the yellow highlighted section again, we have chosen an estimate of it's $19.36 a month, so essentially it's equivalent to the expiring federal taxes and fees on the first page to an assessment that would then be placed under ACHEA on the 236,000 covered lives in Alaska. It would generate approximately $55 million, and it would have a premium impact on the individual market in Alaska of reducing those costs to individuals of roughly 15 to 18%. We anticipate another year of 36 to 40% increases. So the effect of this bill essentially is to substantially moderate the ongoing cost increases in the individual market for the 22,000 Alaskans that are insured in this market. And I will close my remarks by saying, as we all know, the insurance, health insurance industry is frightfully complicated. This is a straightforward solution to an immediate problem. It's not perfect, but it is doable.
Thank you, Mr. Parody. And so the highlighted $19.36, it's my understanding that the legislation before us provides the department with the authority to do the reinsurance, but that the rates would actually be promulgated by regulations. And we had asked you in a previous meeting to provide, because you had said you would capture the higher cost codes, and that's what we're looking at here. So, Ms. Wingheyer, could you run us through that? Have you already identified what codes you think you'll capture?
First, let me start. I'll introduce myself for on the record. I'm Lori Wingheyer. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance, and you're right. What you have before you in the second document is when we ask the insurance companies to, and three insurance companies, Premera, Moda, and Assurant, who is writing in the individual market at that time. Aetna did not respond to our data call. We asked them to submit their claim data, and then we quantified it. And you have the first 10 highest cost claims, the top 20, the top 30, and the top 40. And that is the claims we see as identified as set 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then the final page of that set of documents shows that all of the data combined.
And which page is this, Ms. Wingheyer?
It should be the final page of that document.
And then that is titled?
Annualized Adjustment.
Okay.
Adjustment. So that then is combining the numbers. But the claims themselves are identified as far as the HCC code, which is hierarchical claim condition. So you can see that throughout the first four pages, you're just adding 10 more claims or conditions to each page, because those are the top drivers in our market as far as cost of claims.
So Ms. Wingheyer, so when you see in this table condition set one, that's the first top 10 highest, and then next 10, and then
yes,
okay.
We just keep adding. So then when we get to the last one, we're looking at if we took claim set one, we would be removing basically 11 to 12%. Estimated claims remaining would be 88.9%, and so on, 78.2%, 71.3 for set three, and 67.6. And the estimated claims seeded would then be 27.4%. 54.2, 71.8. But then we're adding back in as you go further down to make this simple, we're having the premium put back in because we wouldn't just cede the claims, we would also make the premiums go over to the reinsurance program too. So we're basically taking this last set of data and putting it over here to say, okay, if you take the number somewhere between 10 and 81 million as shown on this last page and distribute it across the 236,237,000 covered lives that we have based on our annual report, what would that claim cost be? And we're trying to make it match what we know they're paying in reinsurance and tax that are sunsetting this year. And that brings us to about $55 million because we're trying to make it be effective and make an impact on the market, but yet not be an increased burden. So we know this cost is already in the majority of the programs. And that's how we got to the numbers that we did. I hope that makes sense, and I'm certainly willing to ask any questions or answer any questions that the committee members have.
Ms. Winghire, for those people perhaps listening in online and for the record, could you describe again the nature of the problem and what this bill attempts to do? Because it, at first glance, you would say, well, it increases insurance premiums. But it's solving a different problem entirely, which is even higher premiums. So could you put that into a context that for those who might come back and listen to the hearing or read about it, they could understand what it is the bill is trying to achieve?
Madam Chairman, you're right on both accounts. We did this bill because we are, as the Deputy Commissioner just said, we have a very market that is very small, and we've experienced rate increases of close to 40% the last 2 years. We have no reason to think that we're not about to face a third year of rate increases in the individual market of close to 40%. We have two remaining insurers, and we know one has been stressed financially this year. We think our population is at about 23,000, and we think it's settled there. We have no reason to think it's going to grow at this particular time. We have had in Alaska the high-risk pool for a number of years, and what we're attempting to do is basically take those individuals that would have been in the high-risk pool had it not been for the Affordable Care Act and put them back into the high-risk pool. And we're going to fund them in the high-risk pool, a CHIA, as we would have funded them before the Affordable Care Act. So it's going to be spreading the cost out across the entire marketplace or covered lives, as is defined in the bill, as we did before the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. What that's going to do is then drive, hopefully, the cost down of the individual market so that consumers, one, that are paying if they're healthy or not, but bring the price down in the individual market or stabilize it so that people can actually afford to keep their premiums. Admittedly, for some of us, we may see a few dollars a month increase, but for those of us that are in the individual market, we're going to see a stabilization and hopefully see insurers either stay in the market in Alaska or come to Alaska and want to do business. I can tell you that since this bill has been released, it has gotten press down in the lower 48. Kansas has called and asked for copies of our data. Maine has called. Tennessee has called. I'm trying to think what other states have called and asked what are we doing with our reinsurance bill, because they're facing the same struggles that we are and are very interested in what Alaska is doing to solve this problem.
Thank you. Any other questions of committee members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. I'd like to go ahead and invite anyone in the room who would like to testify. Actually, I'm going to take a brief, Eddie.
She was calling with Pereira Blue Cross Blue Shield. You might come forward for any further comments on the bill. Okay,
Thank you, Madam Chair, for introducing me to the record. She was talking about the request of the last day. I'm here today to testify in full support of Senate Bill 206 and just have a few brief comments to make. The individual health insurance market is in crisis in Alaska. Alaska's average benchmark claim premium is the highest in the country at over $700 per month. The comparison to the next highest cost state is $468 per month. So the premium increases we've heard about for the last 2 years have a significant impact of 40% when you're sitting at that kind of a premium. So while the subsidies will help many, there's over 400 individuals or career coverage who do not qualify for them. And we are very concerned that the premiums will continue to skyrocket given the small size of the individual pool. What fewer people describe the risk is small number of individuals with these high cost conditions, as you can see from this chart, is destabilizing the pool and impacting costs dramatically. One solution we've already seen is an approach that a couple of other insurers have already taken, which is to exit the individual market. Alternatively, Premier and Moda have been working collaboratively to come up with a sustainable option for Alaskans. As an insurer that offers coverage to both individual and group purchasers, with over 35% of the market share of the group business, Premier supports a balanced assessment that will not place undue burdens on the group market, but will also help the individual market provide some relief there. I think we should worry about the assessment that there would be basically in wash with what those purchasers have been paying under the federal reform as to taxes. This new assessment would basically make that even not add additional costs to the federal plan. Senate Bill 206 will help mitigate the premium increases and have 10,000 individuals who are coverage they ask for your support. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions on committee members? Thank you again for coming today. Our final testifier is Jason Conyer from Anchorage with Moda, and if you need to feel close to 2 minutes, it will help us get to our agenda today, so don't miss your fatigue.
course, if going back to order, Senator Diesel.
Madam Chair, we've got a previous motion. Correction, I move Senator 206, version 29GF2126F/alpha, from the State of Individual Recommendations and the Individual Obtaining Session. So moved.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. We'll take a brief recess before we end House Bill 254. Members of the committee, so I'll back to order. Next on the agenda is House Bill 254, which is introduced by Representative Smith, the Senate Data Commercial Services Board. The bill is having its first hearing. The intent is to give the sponsor and a legislative audit update, hear from the administration, take questions, have public testimony, and then look to the role of the committee. I'd like to welcome Steve Handy, Representative Susan Staff, if you'd like to introduce yourself and present the bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Handy, and I'm the staff of representative students. We apologize for not making it because we're a little bit House Bill 254 has been had, setting the termination date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board and providing for the effective date. And I extend the sunset date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board 3 years from June 30th this year to June 30th of 2019. The BGCS is staffed by the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. It consists of two licensed registered guide officers, two licensed counselors, 10 private landholders, 2 public members, and 1 members of the board game. The BGCSB provides a legislative command for citizen resource conservation and consumer protection. The board develops professional and ethical standards, administers exams, makes final licensing decisions, and takes civil action against persons who violate regulations. The board members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. The board is regulated professionals, including assistant guides, Class A assistant guides, master guide outfitters, registered guide outfitters, retired guide outfitters, and transporters. According to the department, the economic impacts of guiding and lending in Alaska prepared in the Alaska Professional Lenders Association by the McDonald Group. Guiding and lending in Alaska loaned for a total of 2,210 jobs and $35 million in total labor income in 2012, including loans right up in Alaska and Houston Labs. Guiding and lending generated a total of $78 million in economic activity in Alaska in a year, And Diamond Hunter purchased nearly $2 million in hunting licenses and began taking tax in this security. I do oversee my legislation. Bart was one of the sons that before. This contributed to the accumulation of the debt reflected in the legislative audit. However, in December 2015, the board was reinstated by the legislature. The Paycheck Commercial Services Board is essential to the safety of hunters, guides, and transporters coming to Alaska across the natural resources. This is the management of the resource itself. This is under the past HB 254 to secure the Paycheck Commercial Services Board. As I mentioned, we have President Alfred Perry, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And we also have Dick Moore, President of the Alaska Professional Learning Association. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hannon. Would you be interested in providing your comments and informing the committee to the
question?
Absolutely. Are there any questions of committee members?
The board was sunset on June 30th of this year, and I believe it was paid roughly 1 year to effectively shut it down. And I understand the previous situation we just had before, but I think the how that contributes to the government is the enforcement. Apparently, it costs a lot of money, and the board contributes money to training the guides, enforcement, some of the things that could have been addressed without simply just enforcement.
Thank you.
This might be a question for the auditor. Every summer, this board is running.
For operational improvements. If you have a copy of the item, thank you. There are four. First one was to the Regional Operations Business Information Licensing and DCIPL to their director to ensure the staff and human procedures to provide patient aid better support to the board. This is a repeat finding of the audit in 2011. Some problems in terms of board and division. This time around, we found improvements.
business departments in the area of public policy exams and meetings. So that there is a short program in those areas. Also, we recommended on page 10, the director of DCPPL did steps to improve the timeliness of investigations. This is an area we have also found with other boards. We looked at 25 investigative cases, 17 of the three have been active in a case, showed no activity, no movement on the case. Found that this was due to, according to the investigator, a lack of resources to address the large case load, and we also found problems with effective case monitoring. So improvements and recommendations for improvement in that area. And then third, on page 11, this is a recommendation for the board and DCPPL's director to work together to increase licensing fees to address the support deficit. This is the third time we have a recommendation to address the deficit. In our last audit in 2011, we noted that the board had a deficit of $374,000 at that point. Obviously, the board did not increase fees or not reduce expenditures, but that deficit was likely to increase. As an example, it was over $1 million of last year. And there were two various factors to note. Basically, increasing the fees, there was a reduction in the number of licensing renewals. Plus, there were causes of the problem. And then the division itself allocated reallocated indirect costs, and we've heard this before, resulting in another $200,000 increase in the deficit. They improved their post-allocation of policy back in 2012. So, all of those factors together led to this deficit. To address the deficit after the 2009 audit, the division did go forth and propose an increase in fees. That proposal was increasing the various fees between 61% and 68%, so very significant. Public comments came out fairly negatively to increase the fees, and the division did not go forward at that point. FY14, it did increase fees approximately 44% across the license types. Even with that increase, for that license period, the revenues were not enough to cover the expenditures. So, and if that deficit continued to grow. So, given their recommendation to increase fees, they have responded back in the summer to draft regulations. And again, we do believe that those will be effective at addressing the deficit. And both the board and the division were proactively pursuing effective action even as far back as last summer. And then the fourth recommendation is on page 12, and that's a recommendation to the division director to ensure that the transfer license renewal application will comply with statute. There's a statute that requires these licenses to sign an affidavit. Their application to sign an affidavit and all activity reports have been filed with the department. And in order to test the transfer applications, there was no affidavit, so it wasn't in final statute. It was a fix. Overall, the department of work did confirm with all of those conditions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or opinion members? Senator Stevens?
Except for this process that we're going through right now, the next year when the sunset will slip forth and checking the progress. We don't have a mechanism to go in and actually formally monitor unless we're proactively requested to.
Question for visual licensing division. I don't think either of these folks are going to answer any questions. Well, I'm sure that this will not. What you have to do with the division.
Are there any further questions for the Ghostbusters and Miss Curtis? Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to invite Sarah Chambers of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Welcome, Ms. Chambers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Division of Corporations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing.
Sarah,
Yeah, thank you. My question is about the assembly. So, of course, if I think about where the deficit the board is running, and they've been running for quite a few years, it occurs to me perhaps it needs a woman or two on the board. But, I'm looking at the picture that is on here, the narrative board, with $20,000 on program for travel. So, I assume that's from board members from the outside of Anchorage.
Physics for your center, so the you're correct, the travel is for board members and one staff member to the board to attend board meetings. That's more typically holds 2 meetings a year, one Anchorage and one Fairbanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm noticing at least one of our provincial boards is no longer traveling to other locations, and that saves its travel money. So, the office is located in Anchorage, the staff are located in Anchorage, is this true?
As you mentioned, the career is based in Juneau.
Okay. I would suggest that perhaps travel could be reduced if it were central to wherever people are, just along the farm that I would do the play.
Thank you. Thank you. In this chamber, there was a discussion about the Oregon legislative it sounds like it's been an ongoing discussion we've had over the past long time being here. Is there anything that you wanted to provide information that you wanted to provide to the committee on just the status and the improvements and the work that's been done? What is your role in helping address some of the recommendations on this process and how the group is going to be audited?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to address all of those issues. First, the issue is the deficit, and as Madam Chair noted, we do have boards that struggle with deficits from time to time. We have, in the last several years, been working closely with legislative grants, been working closely with our administrative services director, and most importantly, working with our boards to improve our fee analysis structure. We, this year, as part of the legislative and appropriations for our division, restructured our fee analysis to make it far more detailed. It's also an interactive Excel spreadsheet that we send to our board members so that they enjoy Excel, they can play with it, and they can test it and see what will happen if we increase the speed and decrease the speed of our farmers and over now. It really helps the board members who are most actually a stakeholder in the design process to get that picture. And we've seen that tested in the last several months. We, for this board in particular, though, we raised fees in 2013, we raised fees in 2015. And again, this legislative finance has assisted us in looking at some of these areas. They also indicated that one fell swoop eradication of a large deficit would probably have the effect of putting many of our lines and transporters out of business. We had a board paying special attention when we have been saying fees to look at areas that don't unfairly penalize our entry-level guides, our assistant class A guides, those who are what we refer to as non-contacting guides. They don't control the contracts. So we have worked to structure some of the burden on those who are contracting, as well as Mary mentioned, and look for new revenue sources. A particular note is the record and transport activity report database, which was indicated in the 2011 legislative law as a potential source of great expense. Not only did we restructure that in response to that grant, but we have also attached a fee to compensate for staff time and data entry scanning and working with the state troopers and fulfilling their statutory need for that information.
Any further questions that I was given?
So I'm going to ask you some objections from folks about the increases. Can you tell us all the time we're looking for the guides themselves and transporters for the subject mostly to the fee increases?
Thank you, Chair Senator Stevens. We want this to be increased. and there's usually a general discussion with senior business class go up, so we understand that. This board has been very positive in working together and recognizing that the increase is needed, and helping the licensees recognize and understand the need for it and understand for themselves. We have seen with the new transfer activity report fee, we have seen and heard from many transporters who are concerned about the impact of that fee on their businesses. We went through the administrative procedure, public noticing process to get the word out. Granted, it was not at the time when they were sued by the mailboxes. However, we've been working with them since the fee has been enacted in regulation as of last November to fill out some gaps. We wanted to strike a fee balance that aggressively but reasonably addresses the deficit to avoid that. Congress the operating cost, but that's by any means, because it will try every 2 years to collect the largest amount of revenue and to do so in a way that is as minimal as possible while meeting the business need and justify that spend. So, transporters are really registering a lot of concern. I'm already meeting personally with the transporter subcommittee now twice to listen to their ideas and solicit new ideas that this isn't the best fee, this isn't the best way. Plan something new, but we've set a bottom line and not move back where we have to go forward with the same direction. We adopted fees effective last November in effect for this renewal period. This is fairly sort of as the chips in the right with the time frame where I could verify that they were effective, that they were adopted by the director and signed by the governor. So we have seen a fee reduction at the end of the second quarter in December down to about 100,000. That was before during the renewal, many guys did not renew at that time, so we're anticipating the third quarter report that should be out in the next few weeks to show additional reduction. So we have made that legislative commitment to set fees, and we will continue to review the need for our annual fee analysis. So, several factors come to mind. Number one, these transporters, and perhaps I'll be correct and have to worry, but they're transporting by state hunters, as well as the state hunters, and some of the state hunters as well. But these folks have very little license fees for hunting in our state, or frankly, the license is on sale. We're working on increasing those, but this is a licensing fee that these businesses can pass on to their customers. We have a $4 billion deficit. Somebody's paying the shortfall for this board, and it's on their boards. And, you know, that group pilot is wonderful, but it can't last forever. And we are dealing with the largest industry in our state. And reducing the subsidies for that industry is more being subsidized by the other boards. It seems to me we should be more aggressively going after that, and these folks need to understand that. This is part of the deficit that we're all dealing with. Do you know well of hands, viewers, what the transformer license fee is every 2 years?
The current fee that was increased from the prior fee is currently $150. And the biannual fee is $50 every 2 years.
So this brings me to think about the direct entry midwives. I think that group of licensees is somewhere less than 40 people. And their license fee is somewhere in the $1,000 range, which you can correct me if you can't find. But they also have a very large lawsuit that board stepped up, and their fees are higher than this, I'm confident. So, again, I would call on this group of professionals to step up and take responsibility. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Chambers. We would now like to have a vote of testimony on this bill. House Bill
Lisa Moore with the Alaska Professional Doctors Association calling in from Blue Hat. Can you introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please?
Thank you. $235,000 of revenue that was granted to the board that just went away. It disappeared during that time. So we were deciding whether it was important to increase the fees or not. So that was undoubtedly a little frustration to those of us who were involved. So the other thing I want to ask is, I'm a open supporter of the current chief investigator, Daniel Burt, and during her effort at bringing up some of the investigative costs, which are often incurred by subcontracting work that the department does for investigative. One of the things that I expect to try to progress in the next few years, hopefully to eliminate the gap. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have three files here, Jim, and we'd like to testify on this bill. Okay, seeing none, go back to the schools. We have today's move the bill to the Senate Finance Committee to review it. Senator Bezos. This is called Black Order, and I wanted to apologize to Rod Arnold. I have closed public testimony. I'm going to go ahead and open it and invite you to testify on the bill. If you have any hear from you, would we like for voices? I'd like to go ahead and welcome you to testify on the bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Today, members, for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. My name is Rod Arnell, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. And the Alaska Outdoor Council has supported the Big Game Commercial Service Board from the first time to the second time. And if there was ever a need to continue having it, it is now. And a lot of that is because the pressure that we're going to see as the federal land managers are changing their purpose, that the guiding industry is really going to be in a pinch on federal lands, and that's going to put more pressure on the state lands, and that's where most of the Alaskan residents, particularly those from rural subsistence areas, are hunting is on state land. So the need to keep the big game guide industry being accountable to Alaskans, and the need for the industry to realize the importance of this renewable resource is extremely important. And I would hope that you do pass the bill out and that the sunset can be extended for another 3 years so I can get their finances in order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The question is, Senator Hazel, behind this will cross your request, Mr. Arnell, if you have any influence related to this board, you might pass on my comments, which you mentioned he's not here. You haven't really subsidizing this board, but have been for many years, and it's time that they step up. So, there's a very small board that regulates way more months, less than 40 of them, maybe 20 something, and they have a much higher license fee than these transporters. These professions are set up.
Thank you. Senator Easton, yes, absolutely. And let's go to the council's 100% support of those increased fees.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, is there anyone else in June who wishes to testify on this bill? Anyone else online? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is closed. Senator Diesel, would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I move HB 254, version $2,009-09-A from committee on individual recommendations and the tax exclusion.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, those in the front committee, we will take a brief hiatus.
Chamber of Commerce Committee by the group. Next, we have Senate Bill 55, intended to adopt a committee substitute. Take members' questions and then vote to approve the committee. And the Senate,
I move committee adopt CMS for SB55LS0524-India as a working document.
Oh, yeah, so that
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Western Iowa staff to the Senate Liberal Commerce Committee. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'll walk through the changes in the version of India. I love Senate Bill 55. The first thing I'm sure begins in Section 1. This is on page 199. It adds text under subsection 4 of regulations. That's the text for the treatment of eye disease. Next change, Madam Chair, is new text in subsection 6. This is again within section 1, page 1 on lines 12 through 14. As by agreement with the State Medical Board describing the scope of practice for the licensee to perform ophthalmic surgery and non-invasive procedures, and this relates to a deletion of the CS, which we'll discuss in this moment, Madam Chair. Next change, Madam Chair, is on page 2. This is under section 4 in lines 19 to 24. Two changes, Madam Chair. First, I'm beginning on line 19, amending the text where the licensee may not perform an injection in the ocular globe of the eye. It is a derivative of Clostridium botulinum, basically Botox, Madam Chair. Line 21, also in addition, notwithstanding the provision of law, a licensee may not prescribe a controlled substance in a quantity exceeding a 7-day supply. The patient requires a refill of the prescription after expiration of the 7-day supply. The licensee shall refer the patient to a licensed physician or ophthalmologist. This change, Madam Chair, is in Section 5, down page 2. Beginning on line 30, continuing on to page 3, line 1, having a licensee may now perform ophthalmic surgery as described by the board in regulation if the surgery is beyond the scope of the licensee's education, training, and experience. And Madam Chair, finally, the deletion is Section 7 in the original bill, which sought to define invasive surgery, including PRK and LASIK procedures. Madam Chair, the practical effect of the deletion of Section 7 is the first of the CS that also corresponds to the changes I talked to under Section 1. If I might direct members back to page 1, lines 12 through 14. This section of the bill is under Title 8. It's the regulations for the Board of Examiners in Optometry. Under the regulations section, this has a subsection 6 that basically says installs the power and the agreement of defining ophthalmic surgery and non-invasive procedures with agreement between the Board of Optometry, the Board of Optometry Examiners, and the State Medical Board. And this would require the definition of both those terms to be in agreement from those two licensing boards. Struggling with the definition of surgery, what's it look like? We define it in terms of the invasive nature. You know, there's not actually a definition of surgery in statute. And so how you, drill that down into the nexus between these two professions, ophthalmology
ophthalmology. That is what the CSS is a compromise in framing the policy agreement between the state medical board licensed physicians and the board of optometry to have been agreed on the terms that they will fund the regulation and statute.
And it shows that the optometrists are governed by the optometry board, and the ophthalmologists are governed by the state medical board, etc.
That's correct, Senator Stevens, the chair. Ophthalmologists are MDs that are licensed medical doctors.
Any further questions on this
Okay, I move the CS Exhibit 155, Bill Version MSL5, 24/5. And yet, I'm going to do the individual recommendations and attach to this one.
Any further objections to the bill? Seeing none, the bill is amended. And our next meeting will be the MSL4 tomorrow. Thank you very much.